This episode and a lot of the other content we produce would not be possible without the kind support of our patrons, especially our producers, Holly and Leanne. Thanks for your kindness. You can become a patron at patreon.com/explorations. That's Patreon, patreon.com/explorations. Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studios with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
Baby Rowan.
Say hi. Hey. Say again.
Say hi.
Hi.
Very good.
Yeah, we'll see how long this is going to last. And Mommy off in the corner. I don't know if I'm supposed to acknowledge her presence, but she's just sitting there and just mildly glaring at me now, so I think I'll just not talk about her anymore. This episode is entitled, What Are You Needing?
What are you needing, Tasha?
Tasha
needs an adult. Oh, my God. Take a picture.
Oh, my God. She snorted, but she snorted. She snorted off mic a little bit.
Here comes Zoe.
And that was a fake snort. We can tell the difference.
I'm sorry.
So we're talking about what are you needing?
Who needs something? I use this as a verbal, just a prompt in the classroom. You know, to the air. Who's needing something? It assists me in my role as a facilitator, which I think we spoke about last week, maybe? I'm not sure.
Facilitating versus instigating. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I like that kind of call to the air. Who's needing something? And what I have found is that when the kids become accustomed to me tossing this out there every now and again, I've actually seen children, like, pause for a minute. And they, like, kind of look at their bodies and do this little self-assessment of, like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need anything.
Yeah, my pants are clean. My nose is dry. I got my car keys. I'm good to go. Yeah.
But then every now and again, you'll see a kid kind of do the same thing and then say, I need some more paint, or I need some paper, or I need David to get away from my face, you know.
Uh-huh.
I need some time alone.
Well, they get accustomed to not only hearing me ask it, but then to have some follow-through.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, it gives them, it's kind of also a prompt to help them be mindful, isn't it?
Self-reflection.
A little bit
sure.
Self-reflection and...
She might be needing something.
I didn't do it right, and I wasn't moving fast enough.
Oh.
What do you need? Okay, breathe. Here's a Mimi. Okay, now what would you like? Okay, good. Okay. You want this one?
You want Mimi? Your blanket. There we go. Just pausing. Okay.
Alrighty.
Oh, the breath.
And see, that's the hard thing about what do you need, especially when you're 2 years old. Sometimes
you might not know how to say it.
You don't know how to say it. And that doesn't only happen when you're two. A lot of stuff on burnout that I do, we do this thing where, you know, part of dealing with your burnout, part of reducing your stress is to start naming and meeting your own needs. Because in this profession, everybody's pretty good at other people's needs. And that's why a lot of people get in to this profession. But when it comes to their own needs, caregivers are crap a lot of the times. And so I ask, you know, name your needs. What do you need?
But if it's the first time in a while that anybody's actually asked you that, the pause of the reflection to come to an honest answer, that can take a long time.
It can take a long time.
People aren't that patient with themselves.
No, and it can be real scary, too, and it can be shocking that, mm-hmm. that you're even be asked. I remember a year or so ago, I had somebody come up to me after a session and said, you know, Jeff, I'm 46 years old, and nobody has ever asked me what I needed. And so that can be a big thing. And the other thing is naming your needs in a room full of other people can be scary and uncomfortable sometimes too. And so a lot of times I end up asking them, you know, this is something you need to reflect on your own away from the group, because that's when you're going
to
get
the... Well, if you wait for 300 people to actually raise their hand and start articulating that, then you can be waiting for a very long time.
And so sometimes it's a personal reflective thing that they need to do.
Well, and sometimes when you have that pause moment, all these things start running through your head and all these needs that you think you might need. It's like, which one do I put at the top first?
The triaging of the needs. That can be tricky.
And so, for caregivers to be able to tune in and be in the moment and support children to facilitate, they've got to start out by asking themselves this question: what do I need?
What do I need to be the best that I can be?
Because that's a lot of the stuff. A lot of people they need to do that personal work away from the job so that they can come to the job and be tuned in and focused and there in the moment. And that can be like we've talked about before. That can be a scary thing. That can be a challenging thing. And so it's hard to get there sometimes.
And I'm thinking right now, what do I need to be the best that I can be? And I need sleep. I mean, I joke that I'm a lot like a toddler, but I mean, I really am. If I go too long with not getting a lot of sleep, I'm done. I get really spent. And that's why I've taught myself how to sleep on the planes, because sometimes that's it, you know, because once you land, you got a 3-hour turn and you got to be on. So I've learned how to just like stop and drop, as Tom says, Tom Murphy.
And that
hashtag
Tom Murphy. Hashtag Tom Murphy. That's a big thing. For me, I think I need some down alone time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too. Oh, constantly. Yeah.
And the sleep thing, that's where I was, the sleep thing, I mean, Nurture Shock, there's all kinds of good information in there about how lack of sleep affects our brains and our ability to process and store memories and all kinds of stuff in there. So, I mean, when we don't go without sleep for X amount of time,
good quality sleep.
It actually affects the operation of our brains.
Yes.
And so that's a big thing. And that's one I hear a lot too from caregivers is, you know, there's so many of them that they wake up, they see every hour on their alarm clock.
And how can you be fully present when you're just exhausted, and not even emotionally exhausted? You're
physically can't
exhausted.
Do it anymore.
I find as this conversation, I know we've only just really started, but I'm really thinking about Maslow right now and that triangle of the hierarchy of needs and what are you needing? And it doesn't matter what I'm wanting you to have. If you're hungry, it doesn't matter how engaging today's activity is, because I need to give you some food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What are you bringing to the table right now? Meeting you exactly where you are, not where I'm wanting you to be or where you're shooting mm-hmm. me. What are you needing? And as providers, are we letting ourselves trust our intuition? Because if you are working with children who are pre-verbal or not verbal or just aren't there yet, are you good at reading the body language that still is effective and very important communication?
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think when we're not taking care of ourselves,
you're
not good at tuning in and seeing those kind of things.
Well, you can, because you're
yeah, you're not
you plop down to that first layer of just even for your own self.
Yeah, yeah. And so how do people get more mindful at this whole what do you need thing, either for themselves or for their coworkers and peers or for the kids in their programs?
I would actually probably argue that that's two separate...
Is that two different things?
Not two separate things, but two different conversations.
Okay.
I think you would need to be mindful of what you're needing. Mm-hmm. And because only if you are taking care of yourself are you really good. I mean, it's that old, you know, the flight attendants, you know, you take care of your own seatbelt.
Your own mask on.
Before you take care of the other person. And that's very true in our job as well. Because you can only fake it for so long before the 4-year-olds can smell the BS that you're bringing a mile away.
Yeah.
And they know if you're playing
even before you know sometimes.
My Malia story, I think I've told it before. God, I really need some new stories. But I like to be barefoot. I don't like wearing shoes a lot. My feet get hot and sweaty, and especially now as I'm getting older. And one day, I guess I was crabby, and Malia looked at me and said, "Miss Lisa, maybe you should take off your shoes." And that a 3-year-old was so like, I totally know what's going on here, and you've had your shoes on way too long. You need to take your shoes off so that you can calm down and be available for us, because right now you're so distracted by the fact that your feet are hot that you're not able to be here for me in my 3-year-old nest.
Yeah.
Called to the carpet by a 3-year-old man. It was pretty awesome. And to be in a place where you're able to receive it, right? I mean, that's a big part of
and
that, too.
And for her to be comfortable enough to tell you that also.
Yeah, and not worry that some hand was going to come flying out. Yeah,
here,
kid.
What did you say? Just go play or something. Yeah.
And so have you always been good at your needs?
Probably, but there was a phase where probably I thought I needed stuff that I didn't really need to do. You know, I little on the OCD end of stuff, and like spending a lot of energy on things that you didn't need to be spending energy on. Got better at articulating what I was needing. And this I know we've mentioned before, but it's I think also timely with this topic, is learning what other people need and realizing that not everybody needs what you need. I think we've talked about the 5 love languages a couple of times on the podcasting and realizing that I might now think that I'm having a behavioral issue when really I'm giving what I would want to receive, but that's not what they're needing me to be giving. So how can I stretch myself and make sure I have a lot of choices, a lot of tools in my tool belt, as it were, so I can be as effective with everybody and not just the people that I get out the gate.
And so what do we, what's wrong?
Nothing. I'm
wondering what's going to come out of my
face. Yeah.
I'm just wondering what do we do when we screw it up?
You say sorry. Well, you don't even need to say sorry. I think you just need to acknowledge. You know, I overshot the mark. That really wasn't what you were needing. Hey, I've had some awareness. And I think it depends on the age of the person. I mean, if it's a peer, you know, hey, you know, I've just kind of realized that I've been giving you this, but you've been needing that. You know, I'm gonna be mindful of changing how I interact with you. Please receive that. Please give me a do-over, you know, a reboot, whatever you want to call it.
And if that happens with a younger child, it shows them that it's okay to just take a moment and say, hey, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and they learn from that.
Yeah, that's not what you were needing. I'm going to work on giving you what you've told me or showed me now that you're needing.
Yeah, we'll work on our words and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, this is the last 2 days have been a relationship. I mean, 15 different topics, but it all keeps coming back to how am I nurturing the relationships and paying attention to what is unfolding in front of me and using that to push my work forward and trusting it.
I think that trust, that can be the hard part sometimes, can it?
Well, yeah. Yes, it can.
Yes.
To trust that it's okay to change my mind, to trust that sometimes a 4-year-old actually is perfectly able to articulate what they're needing from you, and to realize that they might have called you out and you got to make a midstream adjustment, and being okay with that.
Well, yeah, trusting yourself enough to say, hey, I did make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the whole what are you needing thing, we talked a little bit about, you know, asking it to kids in our programs. I think also something that program administrators need to be asking
of their staff
on a regular basis.
Sure.
And a lot of times the dynamic that ends up getting set up is, this is what I need from you in staff meetings, and that may not be the best scenario for building relationships and nurturing teams over time.
Agreed.
And so maybe and from the program administrator perspective, what they need to start doing is figuring out ways to start asking staff, what are you needing, and then
and
helping
to realize
facilitate that.
That it could take, not everybody's walking around the room knowing what they need.
Yeah.
And if it's the first time that somebody has actually asked you, is there a relationship there? Do I trust that you actually want to hear me? That you're really actually going to do something with this? Or is this just another comment card that I'm going to spend some time filling out that nobody actually ever implements anything?
Get stuck in a file
and
gone on.
Exactly. Yeah. I've enjoyed asking that question to a room full of children and watching how they respond to it. I ask the same thing at conferences when it's their playtime. I will to the air, one, because I'm modeling what I've just said that I do, two, If nothing else, I'm consistent, right? So I'm running the workshop the same way as a classroom. So I'm saying to the air who is needing something, and I'm putting myself on speakerphone, and I'm saying things like, there's extra paper under the paper that you're working on. So you just take your paper off. There's more paint over by. And I'm plopping those invitations that sometimes adults aren't willing to, adults will see a can of paint on the table or a bottle of paint
and put it in their purse and take it home with them.
No, the complete opposite. They're waiting to be given actual
permission.
Specific permission to be able to use it. And I'm so involved in this work that if somebody put it out on the table, I would assume that you didn't put it out and I shared with you even one of the stories from this last week. I brought some loose parts and materials and one of the teachers had chosen to disassemble some of it, which, you know, I knew going into it somebody was going to do that. And she came up to me at the break and she said, I took this apart. And I said, okay. And she goes, and I put it in my pocket because I was worried that you were going to see it. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, wow. And I asked her, you know, were you worried you were going to get into trouble? And she's like, well, I knew I wasn't going to get into trouble, but I wasn't sure if that was what I was allowed to do or supposed to do. And it was another opportunity for me to point out I wouldn't have had it in the space if I had not already exhausted, at least in my brain, what I thought you might do with this. So, you know, no, you're not into trouble.
And I love that you created an environment that was comfortable enough that she felt safe
to say,
enough to come up and say
look
that.
Look what I did.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Look
Is
what
it
I did.
Okay?
Yeah.
Do I
yeah,
need to
absolutely.
Hide it in my pocket? No, you don't need to hide it in your pocket.
Yeah.
You can bring it in your pocket if you want to bring it home, but if you're wanting to just plop it right back to where you found it, that would be more
That's
than
fine,
fine too.
Jeff and will come
did.
And pick it up later.
And she did. And she just kind of dropped it back. And it was just funny. Like, she had to hide. She felt she had to hide it. And it just makes me wonder if that's what you're, as an adult, bringing to the environment. How is that, even if you don't think it's influencing how the children are approaching the space, I would argue that it probably is.
Yeah, and I think the way she reacted is the way kids react
a
lot
of
times.
Yeah, I can see a small child coming up and doing the same thing.
The ones that, you know, they do that thing where they go, some of them, I mean, most of them go through that thing where they cut their own hair.
Oh, yeah.
And then you
and
find,
then
a, find
a
pile. The pile of hair and the scissors.
So the obvious hunk does
yeah,
not
you don't,
signify
yeah, they don't think,
anything.
Well, they're not going to notice now. I hit the scissors and I put the 4 pounds
right.
of hair under the sink.
Like some kids, you know, put the blanket over their head saying, well, nobody can see me now, even though
you're right.
You can't see me, but I can see,
And so that, I think that's something we're dealing with on a regular basis there. And so,
what are you needing?
What
Who
about
needs something?
What about on another level here? What about when dealing with regulators of programs? I would love to have an environment where instead of coming in with the copy of the regulations and a red pen and a clipboard, regulators were coming into programs and saying, what do you need?
What do you need?
Because I think a lot more positive work could be done that way. In my center days, I dealt with two licensing dudes, Lyle and Roger, and both of them were pretty easy to work with. I mean, they were kind of intimidating for the staff sometimes, but I mean, mostly they'd show up and we'd hang out in my office talking for an hour and a half, and then they'd check out the program. But both of them, their whole coming in thing was, I'm not here to make trouble. I'm fresh eyes. And so that kind of...
But that right there is a whole different perspective shift. I mean, I think you and I don't know, but I'm guessing that what you received is really different than what most people are actually getting. You had a relationship with your licensors, and that's fantastic.
And see, I've never had the bad experience that I hear so often, and so I've got no real time experience with that. But what I wish for is more people out doing the job like these two dudes were, because they wanted to be those fresh eyes.
Do you
need?
Think it was the dude thing?
It very well could have been. I don't know.
Two dudes talking to each other and.
Well, I'm just saying.
Dude talk.
But yeah. I mean, the reality is that there is a different energy and a different thing that males and dynamic that they bring to the table. And I, in my own experience, just not only not just even with men in early childhood, but just kind of with men in general, is that there is a little bit more of a laid back, not a disengaged, not interested, but a little bit more, not so quick to shut stuff down. And, you know, I just think it's an amazing energy that we need more of in this profession. So I was wondering if, in fact, there's an element of when you ask what are you needing, whether it's your license or but the pause and the waiting for the response, that
could be a hard thing.
Because it could take a long time. Are we patient? Are we waiting? Are we assuming that the person knows right out the gate what they are wanting? And I'm thinking of response time. You know, it takes some people a long time to formulate that response. And if I'm just looking because I got 14 centers that I have to look at today before 3 o'clock, because that's when my shift is over, you know, how am I sending off body language that although you're asking me with your words, what are you needing, is your body telling me that I really don't have time for this conversation? Yeah. And my persona, that I will shut down completely. And then I would, because I can tell that although you appear to be asking me, you're either not caring or you've checked out or whatever, and I will shut down. Now, I might still think about it, but I can tell that this is not where this conversation is going to end up being. This is not going to be successful for anybody.
Yeah, and I think I probably, I mean, I'm, and maybe that's partly dude thing too, ready to move on to the next thing. And so you got to know what you need. I mean, who doesn't know what they need? And so I'm probably not good at being patient in those kind of things the way I could be better at. I mean, just thinking about it here for a second.
Yeah, but I've also learned in my undergrad, I was taught the importance of what I'm about to say, which was that acknowledgement of that. Hey, you know, right now I'm feeling a little bit of a disconnect here, you know, that you've asked me this, but my sense is that you're either distracted or you're not really listening, and I've learned to call it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Instead of just shutting down, I mean, my first instinct would be to shut down. My trained instinct, which is where I would go if I was well fed and well rested, which would be, wow, you know, let's put some language to what I'm noticing and see where that goes.
And so whether we're talking using this question with coworkers or children, whatever, the big thing here is it's got to be a honest question. It can't be one of those robotic things that we do.
No, it can't. And the relationship is still what is coming to the point here. Do I have a relationship with this licensor that I feel that I can go out on that limb and say, hey, I'm loving that you asked me this question. I'm noticing, though, that you've looked at your watch 15 times in the last 2 minutes, and that's kind of telling me that maybe you don't have time to wait for my response. Should we table this conversation perhaps for another time? That's a leap of faith. That's a lot of trust. That's a lot of risk. And if I don't have a relationship with you, chances are I'm going to err on the side of saying, well, she didn't really care.
Yeah, and it can be one of those things that we've talked about a lot. It can be another one of those scary things.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people have a hard time getting by there. So what do you need, baby?
What do I need?
Yeah.
Sleep, I guess, right now.
Why are we wearing you out?
Yes, you two do wear me out. It's one thing when Jeff wears me out, but you put Jeff and Lisa together, and it's like, oh.
Tasha, we broke Tasha again.
I've been mindful of how much I've been drinking, but I can't control the two of you unless I go. I'm going to bed.
Pod weekend can be a.
Dude, I need a week off after pod weekend.
Pod weekend.
First, I go to detox, and then I take a nap. I'm not even kidding.
Pod weekend can be kind of a.
But I enjoy it. I know there. I mean,
it makes
catch
my
up
brain.
It. Yeah.
It makes my brain just start going. I'm 99 miles an hour and.
Yeah.
You know, and even last night, I think I was like, "Oh, good, we're going to bed early." And what was it? It was like midnight. You know, I was like, "Ooh, an early night."
Same, yeah, yeah. Well, if we hadn't played Harry Potter,
that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I played. I think I was just a willing participant.
You answered questions.
I answered.
We cheered you on.
I think I won, though.
Yes, you did.
I think I won.
We just wanted to go to bed. Lisa won. Let's go.
And so,
what are you needing? I need to win. I need to be a winner.
I don't need to know how to play the game. I just want to be the winner.
Just be nice to me.
And so when needs aren't getting met the playroom, what?
Oh, that means a behavior problem.
Yes.
I I've said that, and I never want to oversimplify what causes a lot of stress to many providers. However, I will say that kids do not have a reason to act out in a classroom if their needs are being met. So the minute I start to hear a lot of, oh my God, there's such a behavior problem, behavior problem. First of all, I want to know what behavior problem actually
means
for you.
Yeah.
And second of all, let's point out, you know, is this child very different than you personality-wise? Is this child
very the same as you?
Very the same as you? Mm-hmm. And let's kind of, as you say, I love that. Let's unpack it from that spot. Because sometimes a child might need an intervention. Sometimes the environment needs an intervention. And sometimes the adult is the one that actually needs the intervention.
Oh, man, it was going to be brilliant. I had something.
Oh, sorry. Just tell me to shut up.
No, I was engaged and listening and tuned in.
That happens.
I think I'm getting old.
You are not.
Okay, what are you needing? We're good with it. I don't know where we're going to go. We got anything else to do to wrap this one up? We got any other thing? Anything else we want to touch on?
I would put a challenge out. Start asking the room.
It came back to my head.
Okay, good.
We've talked in past episodes. Our go-to situation has been biting a lot. And when you're in a room full of people who are in a developmental stage where teeth are a thing.
They need something to bite.
They need something to bite. If their needs are being met, if they are fed, and they've had the sleep that they need, and they feel safe and secure, you're eliminating a lot of the causes of the biting. And so, if they have something to chew on, you give them a hunk of rawhide or a
biting
elk
box.
Bone
it's
or something.
It's all the stuff that you can be biting. And uh-huh. There's a stick in there. There's dog toys in there. And they're all bleached and clean, and all that common sense is applied to the biting box. And so it's not don't bite, because I've made peace with the fact that that's what kids bring to the table. They're going to bite. What I will say to listeners, if they're not familiar with this, is that the box of stuff to bite or hit or punch or whatever, kick, it needs to be in the space before you have a biting issue.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
you
can't wait for that to be a crisis and then be like, it kind of just needs to always be in the room so that you can redirect. And I will tell the audiences that, you know, me telling you stop that, go somewhere else is not redirection. Me actually walking with you and finding somehow how to reengage you is actually redirection. But yeah, and that's to pull a page from Heather Shoemaker's book. It's not don't XYZ. It's you can XYZ over here where it's not hurting somebody.
Yeah, we make it safe, acceptable, and accessible.
What are you needing? I need something to bite. Well, let's go get the biting box. I cannot let you bite her. However, let's find something in this box that you can hit or bite. And I don't know. I think I approach this with, I think we've overthought it, or we're so worried about the moral. What did Dan Hodgins teach us? That stop making moral issues out of developmental ones.
Yeah.
Kids are going to hit. So stop making it some moral value judgment call and getting on your monologue and
growing up.
They hit. So what can they hit? We're not going to hit other people. If you got hit, you're going to teach you how to start saying, you know, don't hit me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you're two, where's the things of pillows for me to be smacking silly?
Yeah. To get that out of you. Yeah.
All right. So we ask ourselves, what do I need? And then we start working on that a little bit, because that helps us be more here in the moment.
Yes.
Then we start asking in our programs. We start asking of our coworkers. We start asking of our staffs. We start asking of our administrators and our licensors, what do you need?
Because I'm going to be more able to facilitate your honest request if I'm taking care of my own self.
And then the other thing we take away from this is that when we ask those questions, we be in the moment and ready to accept and maybe wait for the answer to come along.
Good work.
Anything else we need to recap?
No, I think that's good. No.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.